perceive that which is greater than the physical world.
Broadcasting live from Daytona Beach, Florida. This is Lighting the Void. I'm your host, Joe Roop, and we are live on Fringe.fm, KTLK Digital Broadcasting. Thank you for joining us tonight on the Fringe FM or wherever you're listening from across the world wide web. I also want to thank Chris Mateo or Matthew. I forget how you say it. I always say it wrong, brother. I'm sorry, but he just had me on Forbidden Knowledge News, which is, he's a good friend of mine, and it was a pretty good show. And I'd kind of like to go over a couple of things that we talked about, actually, and expand on those things. So if you didn't get to see it, you should definitely go, or listen to it, you should definitely go check it out. I know he got kicked off of YouTube, but I am, you know, I'm okay with that. Because he told me, he didn't even know why he got kicked off YouTube. He just got banned from YouTube, so he's on Rumble. And I guess that's part of being a talk show host. When you want to talk about whatever the hell you want to talk about, you get censored. So we're still on YouTube, though, and I've put up a lot of the latest shows on there. And Anthony might come on, too. I know he's just getting off work, but... I'm texting him right now. Come on when you can, or if you can. He's a hardworking man. So, so anyways, he got censored on YouTube, and I have no idea, because I feel like I talk about all the same stuff that these guys talk about, but I never get taken off of YouTube. I have to think it's because maybe I don't monetize stuff, or I don't know, but... We've been on YouTube for a while, and if you, like, I'm just going to say this. I know it's probably a boring subject, but you can build an entire audience, business, channel. Like, you can really build a cool thing on YouTube, and there are people use YouTube, and I don't know why. That's, I guess, because it's so convenient, but isn't that the problem, right? Because we've become so accustomed to certain social media platforms that we don't want to use anything else. Like, I still know to this day that there are listeners that don't even understand. I don't know. I'm not sure. And maybe it's just because they don't know how. But I'm not sure they understand that the show is on, like, every podcast platform, not just YouTube. However, it doesn't really matter. My point is like... It's kind of sad because I know Chris and I know how hard he works, and he does a show pretty damn consistently, and he's been doing it for a while and really doesn't know why he got booted off there. And so I told him, I said, well, the same thing happened to us in Discord, and it was because of I think it was because of talking about vaccines. But I want to let you guys know that I will do everything in my power to keep this platform open, because we can talk about whatever the hell we want to talk about right here on the Fringe FM, always and forever. And I'm not so sure it's going to stay that way with other platforms either, because now all these other platforms are coming out with, like, Amazon and Twitter. They're all coming out with live streaming radio apps where people can call in. And then they have this big thing that, number one, you got to use the app. And number two, they have, like, this whole policy about what you can and can't talk about. And the thing is, the real issue isn't the censorship. It's the fact that we just dive right in and do it anyways. Because it's convenient, you know. Well, I'm done with that rant. But it's pretty convenient to download the Fringe FM app, too. Just go to your Apple Play Store, your Google Play Store, download the app, listen to the show there. Leave us a shout-out. You can put notifications there if you want, like, your favorite song or show when it comes up. You can vote on your favorite show. You can actually do a show on the Fringe FM. That's open to the public, too, as well. If you're interested in being on the air, we have packages for that. It's all free, censorship-free. You just have to kind of stay by the clock, and that's it. Even if you, and it's easy, too, right? So you don't even have to download an app. We have something you can just log in right from your browser. If you got a headset or microphone, you can do a radio show. It's that simple. And we'll even host your podcast for you. All right. So make sure you check out the Fringe FM. Make sure you check out our website, too, at joeroop.com, where we're getting a few more members in there. I got to do, probably this weekend, I'm going to do like a live webinar Q&A, but the coursework for the audio guided astral, like, magic temple stuff is done. We're still going to add more stuff in there, but as far as the basics is concerned, which is what I was mainly focused about, is done. And with that course, you can get yourself out of body, protect yourself, learn how to heal yourself, ground yourself, balance yourself, build your energy, focus, all kinds of cool stuff. We did a show with Amanda came on, and then Owen came on. That shows up on the archives too. We talked about that, and that's on YouTube as well. We got some cool guests coming on too after this. So when I was on Chris's show, he brought up a couple of sensitive subjects, which I find this is a thing that keeps coming up in this field. And these subjects are things like sacred sexuality, the idea of sacrifice, and the idea of protection. And I just want to say, like, I feel with all the confidence in my heart that the stuff that I put out is 100% safe. In fact, it'll protect you. And there's several versions of it. And so you don't just have to do one version of a certain dogma. There's a Christian, Egyptian, Latin, even shamanic, which is kind of redundant if you ask me, but it's there. And when you do this stuff daily, it's going to help you in all kinds of ways. It'll even help you with relaxation. And anxiety and stress. Because we're not able to relax ourselves naturally. And that was one of the first things that I learned back when I had, like, agoraphobia or whatever you call it, when I was having panic attacks and going crazy. And I got so freaking crazy from the stress that was in my life. I thought I was going to have, like, a real nervous breakdown. In fact, I did a few times. But when I got off all the medicines that they put me on, the first thing I learned was, I can't relax on my own. You know, when someone just, you ever had someone come up to you and they just say, relax? It sounds easy enough. But for me, it wasn't. It was a chore to relax because my heart was basically palpitating. I was in the throes of panic attacks all the time. And I couldn't just relax at the drop of a hat. And in order to get where we want to get, like, spiritually and astrally, or even try to get out of body, we've got to be able to not only relax naturally, but we've got to be able to focus and have a good intention, breathe rhythmically. And the biggest thing is that what William Buhlman taught me in this whole deal was the biggest thing about this whole thing was surrendering. I know what you think, like surrender to what? To everything. And so I learned certain things from Robert Monroe, I learned certain things from William Buhlman, a few things from Robert Bruce, but Robert Monroe was real good at getting you to relax in the beginning. And then he would have what was called some box. I forget the name of what he called it, but you would just put all your worries and all this stuff in this box while they were playing these binaural beats. But then after that, you would do what was called a rhythmic tuning, which I think is a resonant tuning. I'm sorry. And I think that was a really good thing because that helped me too. It was a really good method. But after that, if you weren't relaxed at that point in time, I mean, you were going to struggle with it. He didn't really talk much about surrendering, but William Buhlman did, and this taught me a lot, actually. Surrendering to what, though? Surrendering to the idea that you're more than your physical body. Surrendering to any worries, fears, or concerns. Surrendering to the fact that you might fall asleep or you may never get out of body. And then, finally, like, just surrendering to the idea that you don't have a physical, well, that you're more than your physical body as a whole, that you can leave it and be okay. And this was kind of crazy to me because I thought, man, I can't surrender to all this stuff. I'm scared of a lot of things. So I had to practice it over and over and over again. So I think maybe, honestly, if I really thought about it, I think maybe, honestly, it was one of the reasons why I got into magic in itself, because they had tools and ceremonial magic that gave you the ability to relax and not worry about these things. So I don't want people to think, yeah, I just got into this stuff for manifestation or to be some kind of magic guru or whatever. I was really concerned about a lot of the same things most of you are. And the more I studied this stuff, the more I realized that it worked, the safer I felt. And that's kind of why I never really truly just kept pushing and advancing into anything more advanced, like Goetia or trying to mess around with demons, or even like things like the armadillo or certain practices where you invoke different things like Solomonic magic, things like that. It was never that I was afraid of it. It was just that I could surrender and relax a lot easier with the basics. And there was a few times that I read about doing the basics that people were saying that you really don't understand how important the basics of all this is when you first go through initiation until you get into the super high ranks, and then you go back and realize how important all that stuff was and just how special it really is. Because a lot of times, like Stephen Ash and some other people that I talked to when I first started this, I would find that they were still just doing the basics. And I thought, well, man, you guys have been doing this 30, 40, 50 something years. Like, why are you still doing the same stuff that I'm learning? Until I realized how important it is. But today when I was on Chris's show, we didn't really bring up that much of that except for the protective aspect of why you would do these things. Which is fine. But I really don't want people to focus on the stuff that they're afraid of, because as long as you don't participate in the things that you're afraid of, you don't really have to worry about it. It's okay to study stuff and try to understand it for sure, but like if it scares you enough, like why participate in it? Or if you think you're going to get hurt or you're going to be uncomfortable, don't participate in it. But I can assure you, that this stuff, just the three basic ones, and especially like the middle pillar, there's nothing to be afraid of. In fact, it's going to help you. And all kinds of ways. So, during that show, I talked about that false awakening that I got involved in because he asked me about certain like shadow beings and things like that. He asked me about those things. He said, because he's talked to a lot of people that talk about shadow beings or sleep paralysis or running into certain entities. And I told him, I said, well, one of the times that I actually did meet one of these things is because I wasn't doing the work that I was supposed to be doing every day. I wasn't protecting my energy at all. In fact, it was one of those days that I just kind of like fell asleep. I didn't do anything that day. So I don't want to freak anybody out, but I think it's really cool to become aware of this stuff. Like right now, wherever you're sitting, whatever you're doing, if you're like laying in your bed, washing dishes, I don't know, working, riding your vehicle, whatever you're doing, there's a whole field of things around you that you don't see. And I mean, it's full of all kinds of stuff. You don't perceive it, you don't see it, but it's there. And once you become aware of this reality, it's a cool thing. Like, it's a cool thing to know that it's there. It's not scary. But just like life, like if I go outside and I know I got to face the day, I could run into trouble out there. I could give somebody the wrong impression or make a face or something, piss somebody off, and I'm in an altercation, or I could get in road rage, or someone could get in road rage with me. It's really no different, except for we're just not aware of the stuff that's in these realms, so it scares us. Even today, man, I'm going to tell you, like, even today, oh my God, like, stuff that jumps out of the... This will happen to you too when you start doing this stuff. You'll start seeing things like kind of coming through the astral realm towards you. But most spiritual people, and I know if this has probably already happened to you, if you're involved in spirituality, you'll see things come through the astral realm out of the corner of your eye. Or you may see color. It just depends on who you are. But I would see things out of the corner of my eye, especially when I was around a certain person or certain energies. Like, I would be like, damn, this, every time I turn around, it's not like I'm schizophrenic. And well, I guess they would call it schizophrenia if I went to a doctor about it, but it's kind of like if you were in a room and someone walked by you, but out of the corner of your eye, like, you know, that person's there. You saw them. You didn't directly look at them, but they went through your periphery or your vision. So what I'm trying to tell you is fear is a thing that fear never goes away. It never, ever goes away. So you can't avoid it. It's just how we react to it and how we prepare ourselves for it. So even to this day, if I see something out of the corner of my eye and then I look directly at it, it scares me. And it's not, I'm not talking about like, visual anomalies or normal things. Like, to give you an example, when I first kind of started doing this stuff, when I was living in Arkansas, I would do my work in the shack. I would do my rituals behind the radio studio. I would get up and I slept on the couch in the living room. And what's his name could even verify this. J.M. DeBord had a dream that he came out to Arkansas and he saw me through the screen door. And if you go back and listen to that show, he visualized the whole screen door and saw me laying on the couch exactly as it is. It was pretty trippy. But anyways, that's what I would do. So I would go outside. I would look at the stars a little bit, have a smoke, chill, kind of wait till the house got quiet. And then I would go inside and just lay on the couch and pass out. So sometimes I'd pass out in the shack, but normally I didn't like it. I didn't like doing that because I did a lot of the astral work in the on the couch in the shack. So I like to pass out in the house. Maybe I felt comfort because my dad was in there. I don't know. But I would go in there and I would open the door, the screen door, so I could see outside and lay on the couch and pass out. And a lot of times the moonlight would come through the screen door and it would calm me down. Well, one night I walked in there and there's a hallway. And so my dad has one of these kind of like these C, it's kind of like a couch that's shaped like a C. And it takes up the whole living room. But the hallway has a half wall where the wall kind of goes halfway down and then it splits open so you can see into the hallway and then it closes off again. Hope you can understand what I'm talking about. So if my dad got up to go to the bathroom, if he came out of his room, you would see him walk through the corner and then the half hallway wall, he would disappear. And then he'd walk back into his room and you'd see him again, or he'd walk all the way through. What I saw was, it was just a glance of him walking, and I thought it was him. Because when he would get off work, he would be in his painter's white, so he wore white from head to toe. White shirt, white pants, his boots were even covered in paint, you know, painter's white. So literally, the first time this happened to me, it literally freaked me out. Because I opened the door, the lamp was on, the cat was there, and I saw him walk through the hall. Didn't directly look at him. But I saw him walk through the hall and even kind of come around the other end, like he wasn't even going to the bathroom. And I talked to him. I started talking to him. I was like, hey, Dad, like, why are you up? I was thinking to myself, why are you still in your painter's whites? It's late. I said, why are you up? What are you doing? I got no answer. I was like, Dad, why are you up? What are you doing? Still no answer. So I'm thinking, what the hell? Maybe he's sleepwalking. So I go around the corner and I look into the hallway and he's not there. He's not in the bathroom. He's not in the hallway. And at that point in time, I'm thinking, well, maybe he turned around and went back into the room. But my mind's starting to think, did I just see like a being in white clothes or a figure in white move through my house? Did I see that? Surely not. This is what my mind's thinking as I'm walking back towards his room. When I look into his room, he's laid in bed. He's snoring. He don't have any painter's whites on. He's got his sleeping clothes on. And my heart started to race. You know, I got that funny taste in my tongue. That weird feeling you get when you get spooked, right? So, and at this time, I was doing all of these rituals, right? I was doing all of these meditations and rituals, but I still wasn't balanced enough to not get spooked, just like the false awakening that happened. I got spooked by that. So you have to keep doing these things repetitively because we're designed as humans to have emotional swings. It's in our nature for our emotions to swing and all this stuff and adrenaline. Even like when we get triggered, we feel these things. It's just in our nature. But what the astral travelers learned, or you could just say the magicians or mystics learned, is the more they train themselves to like not react to things, no matter how, let's just say, spooky or unnatural things were, the longer and further they could travel consciously. The longer they could stay out of body, the further they could travel consciously, the more they could explore. It's really strange because here on Earth, we can react emotionally with fear. We can feel it in our body. We can feel our hearts race. We can feel our stomachs feel weird when stuff like that happens. We can get scared, and that's all it is. But in the realm, in the dream world, and in the astral realm, if you do these things, you'll go right back to your body. Just you'll go right back, or you'll wake up. Which kind of sucks. So I didn't know why these things were happening to me, the false awakening, seeing things out of the corner of my eye. And I continued to see these things. I continued to have astral and remote viewing sessions. And like I was telling you the other night, when we were pulling like the same tarot cards, lots of crazy synchronicity started happening to me. But it was because, and like, I'm not trying to scare you. I'm trying to get you excited about this. It was because I was beginning to practice these things that have been practiced since the beginning of time, almost. I don't want to say that long, but a very damn long time. It's no different. Like, so the Kabbalistic cross is no different than when a Catholic crosses themselves and says a prayer. The banishing ritual is no different than when you clear a sacred space for yourself and draw any type of protection for yourself. The middle pillar is no different than doing any type of grounding or balancing ritual. But the ones that these have really heavy correspondences and really big time visualizations in them, and they work really good, and it's going like these things are going to happen to you. And I'll tell you about that process too. And I don't know if Anthony said he might call in. I hope he does. But I'll tell you about why this stuff happens. So I don't want you to be afraid of it, because once you understand that fear is a natural thing, it's easier not to become afraid of it. And it becomes like an exciting adventure. And even one person told me that suffered from sleep paralysis their entire life, like for their whole life, that when they went to the thing that we did in Arizona, and we did the really long path working there, the sleep paralysis went away. It just totally went away. And I think that has to do with understanding the process and why these things happen. And when you start to get excited and get this adventurous spirit about yourself when it comes to exploring altered states of consciousness, when it becomes sort of like a Peter Pan adventure, then things can, they're not that big of a deal anymore. It becomes fun. No one talks about that, do they? Like, it's fun. It can be really fun to do spiritual work and go through this stuff and experience these things. It doesn't have to be scary at all. And come on, man. Some of us like to get spooked a little bit sometimes. We like to experience things that aren't normal because life gets a little boring. But I'm telling you, it doesn't have to be boring, because this stuff is real. It's real. But anyways, when we come back, I want to talk about like the work that you do with these like rituals and what happens, what kind of what happens to you during that process, or what they teach that happens to you during this process. So you can kind of prepare for it, because I know some of you have downloaded the relaxation stuff, but some of you became members, and then we even got a couple of members today, so that's cool. And yeah, we'll be right back. I was supposed to take a break at the bottom of the hour, but I went over a little bit, so I figured it would be okay. Plus, I'm running this thing. 1-800-588-0335 is the call-in number. I'll be right back.
Joe, pick up the phone and dial 1-800-588-0335, toll free from the United States or Canada.
Actually, tonight, I got to fix the 1-800 number, so if you want to call in, it's 501-777-5631. The only reason why I have that 1-800 number, that why we pay for it, is so people that can call in toll-free from Canada, too, because we got a lot of listeners from Canada. But, yeah, so Anthony, if you're listening, it's 501-777-5631. I think he's been trying to call in, he said, so... But so where was I? I was just talking about the process of this. So, like, let me go to the website here. So if you go to the website, because I want to confuse people, at joeroupe.com, J-O-E-R-U-P-E, and you go down, so you see the fundamentals, the cross and the pentagram, the middle pillar, and then you see the Magic Temple bundle. And by the way, if you're already a member, Scott has started this challenge that we all got to do the middle pillar until Amanda's birthday, because she's doing that too. I'm doing that. We're going to do it every day until April the 14th. That's 30 days, man. That's almost 30 days of doing the middle pillar so you can see that what happens. And some of you may just like relax and get to higher states of consciousness. Some of you may have experiences. I don't doubt that things are going to happen at all. I really don't. But I wanted to talk about the process. So we're going to keep that challenge going with the members. Or even if, you know what, like, even if you don't have the Magic Temple, like, which I highly recommend you get it because it's voice guided and I'll help you with the visualizations a lot. But if you already know how to do it, do this challenge with us. All right. Now, so I kind of wanted to talk about the processes of what happens. Some people might say it's psychological, but I just told you a story about what was happening to me. The false awakenings, seeing people or figures out of the corner of my eye. So things begin to try to come through the astral realm into the physical realm in my consciousness, in my focus. These things that I believe are already there. And then when you kind of study this stuff and you see the process of creation through the tree of life, that this tree that's been around since the Egyptian times, at least since the Egyptian times, it shows the processes of archetypal energy, formative energy, and then astral energy, and then physical energy. So it gets denser, more dense, excuse me, as it comes down into manifestation. So when you start dealing with these things, you'll be able to notice them. And this is what started happening to me, not just like in the astral realm, but in the physical realm. So, all right. I'll tell you some more stories about some of this stuff, but I want to talk about the process. So the first process is obviously like breath work and relaxation. This is where you learn the power of balancing your breath, because anytime we balance ourselves in any sense of the word, we get more energy, we get healthier, we can focus more, we can relax better. So it begins with the breath. When you're not relaxed, when you're not focused or whatever, like let's just say you're stressed, usually your breathing isn't very steady. So what they teach you to do is to breathe what's called like the fourfold breath, which is a very balanced, focused breath. And the cool thing about the breath, and the reason why we use the breath, because it activates our unconscious, because it's directly related to our unconscious. And what do I mean by that? We can consciously control our breath, or our unconscious can control it. So this is one of the things that we have, one of the mechanisms that we have in our bodies that we can use to consciously kind of affect our unconscious, so to speak. I know that sounds crazy, but let me explain. When you aren't focused on your breath, you unconsciously breathe naturally and normally. And if you are relaxed, rhythmically, a good rhythm, right? A good natural rhythm for your body at the time. See, when you become unaware of your breath, it does its job on its own. But you can consciously focus on it if you need to as well. As soon as I'm talking about it, I'm starting to focus on my breath and how I'm not breathing right. So just by, you know, inhaling and exhaling in a balanced way and focusing on our breath, we're telling our unconscious the thing that rules pretty much everything and is the doorway into the spiritual realm too, into the astral realm. We're telling it we're ready to take over, in a sense. We're ready to become aware of what's going on and take over and relax ourselves. So this is the beginning of the process. Because you see these like magicians and stuff, and you watch the movies, they're in this big trance state and all this stuff, but you don't ever see what happens before that. So now that we've fixed our breath, then we can learn to relax. So we relax our bodies and we become more aware of our body, which is still in a way becoming aware of what's happening. And I have this in the Art of Relaxation. You can download this for free just by signing up with your email. You become aware of all the little like things that are twitches and itches and all the little stuff that's not really relaxing in your body. And you begin to get in control of relaxing yourself. Now, this is like the initial reason why certain people that have panic attacks, including myself and others, don't realize that their unconscious has gone awry. So like if you have like a dwelling thought of negativity in the back of your mind or a worry that doesn't go away, it kind of buries itself in your unconscious. And the next thing you know, you're just full of stress and having an anxiety attack. And you're like, I don't know, I was thinking about dogs, so why am I stressed? But you were consciously thinking about dogs, but because you have buried this, you know, circulation of worry, it's becoming an unconscious program. So we want to get rid of that. And we get rid of that first by consciously taking control of our breath and then consciously beginning to relax. And you feel some of these guided meditations nowadays, they really help you with this. But to be able to take control of it yourself is a great thing. That's the beginning stages of it. Nothing in the astral realm is even really aware that we're aware of it at this point. What happens next, though, is when things start becoming aware of each other, astral entities, and I guess us in the astral realm. So the next thing that we do in the process is the Kabbalistic cross, which is a prayer that's been said since the beginning days of Christianity and even Judaism. It's been said in different ways, but for a reason. And so in this ritual, you cross yourself from your head. Some people do it from the head to the heart. Some people do it from the head to the generative organ. Some people just point to the ground and you cross yourself from shoulder to shoulder and you vibrate certain names. This is where this prayer that's been around for a long time in different ways. What you're initially doing, what you're saying to your unconscious, that doorway, is you're giving faith to the high, to God, to your higher self, whatever you want to call it. And you're also stating that this energy comes down from the highest of vibrations to the earth, or that the kingdom of God is here and its will be done on earth. But with you, you're saying, as the magician stated, thy will be, they don't say thy will be done, not that way. They say it kind of differently because the magicians believed that God works through you. So as long as you're following your heart, you are doing God's will. Now this prayer changes based on like what group you belong to or whatever, but the idea of crossing yourself, if you do this enough every day after you've relaxed and really focus on this light, you'll start to feel the subtle energies in your spine. I started feeling it in my right shoulder and in my left shoulder. I started feeling the tingles, and I thought it was just, I don't know. I was like, well, it's just a tingle, right? It's a nerve or something. It's a natural thing. But the more I kept doing it, and some people, I know what you're saying right now. Well, it's still psychological. It's still psychosomatic. Okay. Well, when you can explain to me why that works, the placebo and all that, then we can talk. But that's really not an excuse of saying that you understand it. But anyways, I'm going to rant about that. When you begin to start visualizing light in yourself and pulling it through your body, you light yourself up in this realm of blueprints, the dream world, the astral realm, what they call the astral suit. So now you've made a statement that you know that you're connected to this thing, and you're stating that you are with vibratory belief. So the things in the astral realm begin to see you. And this is almost like, don't let it freak you out. It's not a bad thing, because you're supposed to face these things anyways. But it's kind of like, I say this all the time, but it's kind of like when you walk into a pond and you throw dog food into a pond and you start seeing all these fish flopping around. They're coming at, they see it. They see you. Usually when people start doing this stuff and they have weird things happen and they react to fear in a really bad way. So when any paranormal activity happens, like they hear noises, sometimes you'll hear a knock, like something will hit the wall like that, right? Or you'll see something out of the corner of your eye, or you might see light figures or color or whatever. When people get spooked, they stop doing it. Like, I'm not going down that road anymore. And then they just start praying again because they're scared. That's totally fine too. But you got to face your fears to actually ascend. You got to like face these things. Just like you do in the world. It's the same thing on a microcosmic level. You got to face your fears here too. And once you do that in the world, then it opens up creative energies above you to let better things in your life. It works both ways. So once these things become aware, and we're doing this every day, the reason why that we move into either the middle pillar or the banishing rituals is that we need to balance ourselves and protect ourselves. So the banishing ritual protects the parts of you that are being affected by things that are supposed to affect you anyways. It's like all your mommy and daddy issues, all your thoughts, all of your unconscious triggers, all of these things relate to a certain element on a higher level that are affecting you, kind of putting you in this alchemical pot. Whether you practice magic or you don't, or alchemy or you don't, you're still growing. So this ritual is like where you become aware of your growth in this 3D world. And you're telling the elements, I need balance from you right now. I need space. I need balance. I need you to all, be in a balanced way. And you can even visualize the things that they correspond to be away from you. So, for instance, let's say you're doing the Christian version and you're doing crosses, but every time you, like, say you're facing the east, and you want negative thoughts to leave you, you can vibrate Yeshua, right? And you can, or Jesus, however you want to do it, and make the cross and visualize all of the negative thoughts leaving you through that cross. There's Egyptian versions of this too and everything. You can do it with when you get to fire, you know, all of the things that are like crazy in your life that have to do with your passions and your desires and your will and all this stuff that's affecting you negatively, you can visualize it moving away from you. So we're just segmenting the things. You know, water would be emotions, and our emotions and our unconscious, and the earth obviously would be things like the physical, negative physical world things that are affecting us, like our health and our financial stuff and our body and our careers and our house even, or a tree outside, just the physical world. If you want to move further into the process and do the middle pillar, so now the things in the astral realm have become aware of you, But they can only, they can still affect you, but they can't really affect you in a way that's going to throw you off balance elementally. And they kind of have to stay guarded and away from your sphere. And this is why magicians would do this. They would do the banishing rituals and cleanse themselves pretty much of their own unconscious bullshit. The things that they're affecting them alchemically, they would cleanse themselves of these things so they could become pure before they invoked anything, any operation. So this is why they were like, teach you this stuff, which is, it's a good thing to learn. Then when you move into the middle pillar, this is like really where the astral stuff gets kind of cool, and you can do this on your own too. You don't have to do the other rituals. You could just do the middle pillar. But this is understanding that you're made of two poles. I talked about this during the middle pillar show, and you're bringing those two poles, kind of, you're taking the energies of those two poles, bringing them together and becoming super aware of the balanced energy inside of you and lighting up centers and then circulating that energy. So it's like you're charging yourself as a battery, and then when that energy is really at its peak, you begin to circulate it through your body in a balanced way, and then circulate it through your aura in a balanced way. And at this point, you can simply just focus on your aura and charge up your aura, or you can visualize it being a shell of protection. So I'm really like dumbing this stuff down so that you understand the operations. It doesn't just affect like the astral realm. I'll get into that in a minute, though. Make a wish. 11:11. So it doesn't just affect the astral realm. It's not really separate, but I'll explain that too. So what's happening? We're learning how to relax and focus. Then we're learning how to become aware of our unconscious patterns, why, and then be able to relax. And then we're learning how to become aware of like the astral realm as it becomes aware of us, as we make a statement to it. It's just a big statement of awareness inside and out. Then we're casting away, we're kind of segmenting, casting away these things and cleansing ourselves of certain things. And then we're balancing our energy and protecting ourselves. Now, by the time I got done with this stuff, when I started doing it, I had my own temple that I made. And when I would like get done with it, it was like doing a workout every day, because it would take me 30 minutes to get through all this stuff. Now, Mitch Horowitz wrote a book about this. And the reason why he didn't just jump into ceremonial magic and do it over and over again, even though he was kind of fascinated with it, is because he was all about effectiveness, time and things like that. So there's some really interesting stuff. I would love to talk to him, but there's some really interesting points that he makes about it too, which I think are good, but I disagree with some of them. But some of them are really good. But I started realizing, damn, like this is taking me 20 to 30 minutes at least every day. Now imagine if you were really stacking correspondences, because you're so, I guess you're so unaware of these archetypal energies and these egregoric energies and the symbols and everything. You're so unaware that we would have to get in garb, and we would have to get in robes, and we'd have to set up an altar. And this is all training the unconscious to understand higher things. Because just because we talk about them consciously doesn't mean that when it comes down to the nitty gritty, or when it comes down to moving in the astral realm, that we can actually perform or use these in a practical way. It's just like understanding how to work on a motor. We understand how a motor works, but if I send you outside to work on the motor, are you going to actually be able to fix it? This is why it's like practice. And then you don't realize till later that, oh, so the astral realm and the physical realm are just, they're all kind of glue. It's all like one big jelly. It's together. I'm just aware of the physical realm. That's it. See, a lot of the theosophists realize this stuff, and even Blavatsky and others would focus a lot of their energy and work on trying to really bring things back into the physical realm. They would try to bring things back into the physical realm, like instantly. And then you got other people like the psychonaut, Terence McKenna, who traveled into these realms using psychedelics and would see all kinds of things, even machine elves. But still yet, something intuitively told him, I wish I could bring this stuff back with me. I wish I could, these things that they're telling me to create and they're telling me not to give into astonishment. And he never really explained that. But the reason why the elves were saying, don't give into astonishment, pay attention to what we're doing, pay attention, is because if you lose your balance and focus, your astral body, your spirit body, whatever you want to call it, will leave. It will go back to your body. If you let your emotions take over, if you let your psyche swing from one pendulum to the other, you have to stay balanced and focused. So they were trying to teach him, focus, stay, you know, pay attention. And all he was thinking was, well, if I could just take one of these things that they're showing me and bring it back into the physical world, it would change the world. So even Terence McKenna intuitively knew there was something to the process of creation and vibration. But I know people are sending me messages on Telegram. I'll read it in just a second. But it, all right, so that, anyways. So this is cool. And I want everybody to do this until like the 14th, until Amanda's birthday, and then just see, like, man, if nothing happens, nothing happens. But I'm telling you, at the very least, you'll be able to relax. You'll be able to focus. You'll feel more balanced inside yourself. You'll probably get a little bit excited about it. Just, I did. Like, I became obsessed with it after that because I started understanding what was really going on. Damn, we went way over break. All right, so we'll be right back. Hopefully I'll have a guest here with me. Actually, I will. All right, stay with us. Since we're going to talk about the challenge, I've got Amanda Rodell's here back with us, and April the 14th, your birthday.
Is it weird that I think it's weird when you say my last name?
Well, I don't ever, well, because I don't call you by your last name. I call you by all kinds of different names, but in public, I figured it'd be nice if people know who you actually are. Let me turn this damn song down. It is weird, because I don't ever call you by your last name when I talk to you, so yeah, it's a little weird. Anyways,
I don't think many people say people's last names on a daily basis.
I say mine on here. I'm Joe Roop. And this is Lighting the Void.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, see, so you're probably more used to it than most people.
Well, I'll just call you Amanda from here on out. All right.
Oh, okay.
So cool. You're like more, you're more adept when it comes to like, the numerology of this and the sacred geometry stuff. I think it would help people understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, what do you want to talk about? I came on because I was like thinking about this cross and like
the Kabbalistic
there's
cross.
There's a huge symbolism. Well, but there's a huge symbolism in the cross in general. And a lot of people think like, oh, the cross has to do with like Jesus being crucified, you know, but it does, but it's been around longer than that. Like, it's been a symbol of materialization for longer than Jesus, by far, right?
Yeah.
So, and by materialization, I mean, in numerology, you know, if you go through numerology from an esoteric standpoint, you start with one, which is obviously unity, one. God, divine, whatever you want to call it, And then you move into two, which is duality, right? So in the, if you believe that the universe is conscious or God, consciousness or God or whatever, the first step in creating this realm that we're on is duality, meaning consciousness and individuality, right? Unity and individuality.
Well, it's just like relativity is, it's split the beginning of relativity.
Right, so it'd be like the split in consciousness, right? So you start with unity, split into consciousness, which in order to have perspective, you have to have something outside of yourself, right?
Yeah.
If everything is one, there's no experience. So duality is two. And then you get into the Trinity, which is holy for a lot of reasons, but doesn't actually tie in much to what we're talking about in terms of the cross and pentagrams and, you know, hexagrams. But in India, they used to call the triangle like the Sacred Mother because it's represented like the membrane from which something material is birthed, right? So you think of like a birth of a baby. It's like the membrane that you go through to be born. Like your water breaks, right? Mm-hmm. You're birthed out of that membrane, and that happens with most mammals. But the actual symbol for the first form materialization is the cross, which is a four, right? So now we're to the number four,
and which is kind of cool.
It symbolizes
on the tree of life. You go one, two, and then three. When you get to three, that's Bina, which is the feminine or the highest mother energy, which is three. And then, yeah, right. Go ahead.
Which is the principle, or hence the membrane, the principle, whatever that would you would consider that is. Depending on your religion or your beliefs, the principle of materialization. But it's not actual the first form. The first form is represented in a four. The cross means many things, but in ancient religion and stuff, it was the crossing between spirit and... So you draw spirit as a line, and then you draw the physical as a line, and it makes an actual cross.
Yeah. So it does make sense, like... So what you're saying is the number four is what represents like the first like physical manifestation that we can actually see physically, right?
Right. It is the like form that comes out of the principle of creation. So your Trinity is the actual principle of creation, right? But four is your the form, the physical form of creation. Yeah, absolutely. So when you're crossing yourself, you are actually essentially paying homage to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Spirit into form. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good...
And when you do it in a Christian way, so say you say the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. So you're actually saying the Father, the consciousness, divine, into the Son form. And then you're crossing yourself with the Holy Spirit. And if you read Carl Jung, you know, he talks... And they actually... believe this in Egypt too. There's some evidence that they thought the Holy Spirit was similar to this in Egypt, but the Holy Spirit is your actual discernment. The idea that we as human beings can discern things that maybe the animal world cannot, and that we have the power of introspection.
Okay.
In order to kind of grow and evolve our consciousness, right? There's not very many animals out there that have that capability. To have discernment and to actually like have introspection in a way that helps you grow. So Holy Spirit is like the divine mind that we have as human beings, as opposed to like the animal kingdom. So you're actually paying homage to that.
Yeah. It's like making a statement of, like the highest of high coming into physical manifestation, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool all my rambling and then you can just explain it that way. I like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I don't mean to like not give Anthony time to talk, but if you think about it in terms of multiplication, in terms of creation, right? If you multiply one by anything, what do you get?
One.
You get whatever
itself,
number you're
whatever
multiplying.
It is, yeah.
You don't get the formation. Right. You don't get the formation of a new number. if you take two and you multiply it by something, you get a new creation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first multiplication where you would get creation from with the lowest numbers is 2 times 2, which equals what?
4, yeah.
4, right. So it's the actual lowest first multiplication that you can do, not taking into account decimals, because there's not really a whole ton of decimals in sacred geometry. You use fractions, and that's a different story. But, yeah. So that's even like another symbolic way of saying that 4 is the actual first physical form that is different from the unity that you experience in 1.
It's pretty rad to think about, because like numbers are probably the highest, most powerful archetypal energy. And speaking of like archetypes and Carl Jung and all that stuff, Anthony Tyler is here, joined us. And see, now we have a triad. We have a 3. Right? So this, what's up, Anthony? This is Amanda, by the way.
Hey, Anthony.
You have to know, like, Owen, I would have never met you if it wasn't for her. She wanted me to talk to you, introduced me to you. She's like, there's this cat named Anthony Tyler. I think you should talk to him. Like, really need to go talk to this dude.
And then you like, emailed Joe, and he was like, I don't know if I should talk to him. I'm like, dude, you should totally talk to him.
That's how that happened. I bet you didn't know that, did you?
You were skeptical.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. Cool, yeah. Thank you for having me on. I'm sorry I wasn't able to get on here sooner, but I figured at the very least I could jump in a little bit. Got off of my work shift. But I haven't caught the whole conversation, and I don't want to derail it, but, you know, since I'm talking, whenever numerology comes up, because I very much understand the power and the premise of it, and the really numbers are just place markers for things that already exist. I mean, these things are already being grouped together, and sacred geometry, like, it's already out there. So it's not a matter of whether or not it's relevant. But I'm always very curious, because I like the psychology and like the abnormal psychology of it, to see the rabbit holes that some people go down, and how it can even become like obsessive compulsive sometimes, and people are just like seeing numbers constantly. Like, have you guys ever heard of the number 23 with Jim Carrey?
Yeah,
that movie.
I love that movie.
But awesome premise. Cool. Yeah.
He starts going crazy, right? Because he starts seeing it everywhere.
Yeah, he goes like nuts because it's like everywhere.
Well, I mean, like, it's cool to understand, in my opinion, the power. Like, so this is kind of why I like the Tree of Life, because you can put the numbers on the tree and you can put up pretty much every archetypal story that corresponds with those numbers, and they all still represent the same kind of energy, right? So at its kind of like highest understanding, and its most simple understanding is a number. But then when you get to like gematria and things like that, if you read Paul Foster Case, or then people start seeing numbers in everything. And then I think at some point, like, it gets past our understanding and people start to go a little crazy. I think I understand what you're talking about.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, there's a fine line between, trying to, understand the numbers of the universe in a way that you're not going to be able to grasp, and you might end up falling down some, like, almost Lovecraftian type rabbit holes. Like, like, just to rattle off another cheesy movie. What is that movie? Nicolas Cage, Knowing, where you start figuring out the math and the numerology of all these horrifying disasters that are going to happen. But
damn, I need to see that. I don't think I've seen that one.
I don't think I've seen that either.
It's been a long time. Yeah, it's one of those, it's a Nicolas Cage movie, but there's good and bad in that. He's a very duplicitous actor. But, I think there's something to be said, like, A, people finding things where, in just like an obsessive compulsive way, where there might not be to begin with, and they're just kind of like trying to understand the world around them in ways that are neurotic. But then there's the other thing where, like, maybe you fall so deep into this and you are seeing these patterns, and maybe you're peeking behind the veil in a way that you know, might rattle your cage a little bit. And that's not to discourage anybody either. I just think that, like, looking at the dark side of some of those things reminds us, you know, to have a reverence and, like, treat these things with respect and have a certain amount of discipline when working with the esoteric. Because
Right, yeah. If
you're not disciplined, it can take you for a ride, you know, instead of you using it as a tool.
I think that happens in the occult, too. This is kind of why, like, I stick with the basics of, like, magic and stuff. And, you know, people are like, well, why don't you do this kind of magic or that kind of magic or do this or that? And I'm like, the basic stuff works for me so well when it comes to conscious exploration that I'm not so sure that I want to use those tools yet. Like, I might try them out, but I don't want to, because I've seen what happens when people go down the rabbit holes of, like, gematria, and then they kind of lose it. But then also I've watched people like Carlson and Nassim Haramein, where they fully understand these things,
right,
and start to reveal all kinds of cool shit, you know, like they got their head together about it, you know.
I think some of the, you know, like Carl Sagan, probably another great example, Einstein for that matter. There's definitely people out there, like, you know, I was splitting hairs of, like, how interested they were in gematria or whatever. There's no question that both of those names, for example, were deeply fascinated with philosophy and deeply fascinated with numbers and how the two intertwined. And, like, that at the root of everything, like, numerology in the long run is the philosophy of numbers. So, I definitely think there's, like, you know, I guess it's like anything. You got to build the muscle. You got to be prepared to, when you open doors, you got to be, like, prepared for what you might find on the other side.
Well, don't you think
catches people a lot?
Don't you think this is maybe why the Hermeticists or Kabbalists could be a reason why that they only kind of stuck through 1 through 10? Like, there's more reasons than that. But, you know, if you talk to a quantum physicist or somebody, like, they're like, well, we found these, like, binary codes and string theory and all this other stuff, and they're trying to find dark matter, and I feel like they're going crazy, even though they're finding actual codes in this stuff, versus, like, some of the Kabbalists and Hermeticists are like, okay, the numbers 1 through 10 are plenty enough to show us that we have these energies corresponding with them and how they work. We'll just stick with that, you know. But, I mean, some people even get deeper into that, though. They start making trees within trees and all kinds of things.
No,
so.
I actually agree with you. There's a lot of things that were added to math that I think were not
crazy.
Very beneficial. If you follow real sacred geometry, like the geometry that Pluto taught, there is no, or, I'm sorry, Plato.
Plato.
I don't know why I said Pluto. But yeah, there is no zero. You don't, there's no zero, there's no decimals, there's no, I mean, we created things called imaginary numbers, for Christ's sakes. Like, you don't think you can get thrown down a rabbit hole when you're working with stuff like that? Like, yeah, you can.
No kidding.
You know? But I think it's also attention and focus thing, because once you learn the basics, everything is just mirroring that. So you don't really have to go down any more rabbit holes. Because, like, everything is just showing you that pattern over and over and over again. So do you sit there and you just go, oh my God, that pattern again, that pattern? Or do you say, hey, I know this, now it's an understanding, and you actually do something with it, as opposed to just going freaking crazy and, you know,
I think
calculating everything
point.
To you.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of,
because that's probably what happened.
Sorry,
go ahead.
There's a bit of a delay. What are you saying, Anthony?
Thank God we have Joe to mediate.
Yeah.
I think there's that's a good example. Like, you could see that, like, as opposed to science, as opposed to a metaphysical discipline, or like Hermeticism, is the, even when something like Hermeticism being so empirical for, you know, like a metaphysical study, they focus on patterns, and it seems like science, I mean, yeah, it does focus on patterns, but there's no end in sight, and they're always just trying to go deeper and deeper down. And I mean, you know, not to demonize science, because I'm an advocate for it, but that is sort of the Faustian dilemma. Before he sold his soul to Mephistopheles, the reason he did it was because he had literally, sold his soul to science and gone so far down these rabbit holes trying to amass, become a king of the, literature and scholasticism. That's the word I was looking for. And he felt like in the end it robbed him because he didn't have anything really. There was no takeaway, It was like he had the knowledge but not the wisdom. And, it's kind of like a different rabbit hole. But I will bring up, I've been looking into, speaking of Faust, the guy who wrote the most famous rendition of that poem, is Gautier. And Gautier was a metaphysician in his own right. And he was actually developing in his lifetime this whole field of science. You hear about Newtonian science, Cartesian science, and these are philosophies of science that have helped build the scientific model as we know it now. But they're mechanical and they're like callous and they don't really take in like human nature really into account. And Gautier had the Gautierian science where it was just as empirical. It was, it did not shy away from any sort of hard data gathering. It just also, unlike these other scientific philosophies, it had at the cornerstone the human experience, because Gautierian science, among other things, the premise was if you're going to go about scientific investigation, you need to understand that part of the tools in measuring that science is the human psyche, in that sort of observer effect way. If you're not going to take into account the observer effect, for lack of a better term, then you're never really, you might get shades of truth, but you're never going to understand what it's really all about or what the context ever is. And yeah, I think that is, when you get involved in anything too much, just to bring it back to numerology though, you're letting yourself, be led by the nose.
Yeah. So this is why I think Manly P. Hall was like, look, when you talk about the observer effect, he's like, look, the teachers are alive. And I play that that clip a lot. He says the teachers are alive. They're not books. They're everything in nature that you can observe, right? So if you can observe it and you start to see these things, it doesn't have to be a complicated deal. It doesn't at all. And what I kind of like about what Amanda is talking about is the simplification of understanding the process between just the simple numbers of 1 through 10, right? And I think Marty Leeds kind of gets into that a little bit too, and I think that's a good thing. But you gotta see, like, when we started creating imaginary numbers or getting stupid with algebra and creating other variables so we can make our equations work and trying to measure, well, we can't measure this, so we got to make another variable so that we can measure it. It's like, When are we gonna
now?
Like,
we need logarithmic numbers and no, we don't. Like, there's none of that in nature. There's no zero in nature. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and even the Kabbalists.
There's a group of monks. Yeah, and there's a group of monks. This Cistercian, I think that's how you say it. But they're the people that did all the Gnostic cathedrals and stuff, and They were part of the architects of those, and they actually thought zero, they called it like the devil's number. Like, they were like, do not adopt this into reality. Yeah, they were like, don't adopt this. This is going to drive mankind crazy, because they already saw like how with that number in this, you can manipulate whatever you want. I mean, when you're making up stuff, when your whole system of mathematics and science is based on something that's not even true in reality. So you have a system of physics
that keeps
changing. Lot of the equations and number, but they're based on a system that uses zero, which isn't even a truth in nature. But you have a science of nature, which is physics, natural law, right? And you're putting zero in it, and then you want to try to learn to understand the universe with that. Yeah, you're gonna. I mean, it's gonna become what it has become. Which is everybody just writes super complex equations to describe things, like, which I kind of think you're right about, Joe. Like, if you just go in nature, you can see them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know. But that's what Nassim Harriman does really good. Like, he, that's exactly how he started his kind of philosophies behind that. Is like, hey, what if everything is just kind of like this pixelated fractal of everything else? Yeah. You know what I mean? And he made some huge, huge breakthroughs, and everyone told him he was crazy. Until he, like, did the math and proved it. This so, is, I mean, I don't know.
What do you think?
There's something to be said about that rabbit hole.
And even the, like, every, so I don't want people thinking, well, you know, because I practice Hermeticism or Kabbalism, that it's the ultimate thing either. It's kind of like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu people believe it's the ultimate fighting system, you know. But, like, even though it's super effective. But even then, when the Kabbalists would get to Kether or Malkuth, when they get to Kether, they go, okay, well, there's the Ein Sof, and the Ein Sof Or. And you hear them talk about this. Well, what is that? Limitless light, limitless nothing, and then, like, limitless nothingness, dark light. And you're like, what? Like, what is that? What? And that's just something that they can't explain. So it's, you could tell it's a theory, because there's no way they can prove that stuff. There's no way they can observe it, so to speak. And I kind of wonder, you know, where you think, Anthony, that psychology or studying psychology, kind of, how does that tool help us understand something even deeper than that, or does it not at all?
I mean, using math, mathematic models to try and understand the world around us and how effective it is.
Yeah, or just trying to understand the nature of reality past, like, the number one, right? Because the mind, in my opinion, and that's probably because I'm such a hermeticist, is the most powerful thing there is. We can take it anywhere. You know, it is the ultimate tool, but it can also be the ultimate devil, too.
Yeah, I don't know, this is a really interesting conversation in general, because it's been a while since I've heard the considerations of zero, like Amanda was putting, but I've heard those things before, and I would like to hear more about that, because I do find it very interesting, and, you know, it makes, at least initially, a lot more sense than, for example, Terrence Howard, speaking of numerology, you know, giving up acting to die on the hill of the premise that 1 × 1 = 2.
What the hell is that about, like, man?
Yeah, no kidding. For anyone that doesn't know, Google it. I'm not trolling. He gave up acting. He's still, you know, I think he's done some, like, a couple low budget. Like, he's probably going to go through a Nicolas Cage thing where he does some B movies and stuff, like they all do when
yeah.
when they say that they retire. Okay. But. But in any case, you know, that's why you haven't heard from him in a while. He is reinventing math. He is reinventing geometry. He called it teriology, as if it all didn't sound manic enough already. And, you know, he went in Rolling Stone. He tried to do this big unveiling, and everyone just kind of laughed him off. And, you know, he's been in relative obscurity since then. That was like 2016 or so. But, I think that's a great example of, and of course, just the arguments he makes are completely incoherent anyway. His basic premise is that if you have one on one side of the equation and one on the other side of the equation, then you can't, and it becomes one when it equals out, you're missing part of the, you're missing a quantity there, and you could see the insanity, like people falling down the rabbit holes and not being able to keep up with
to
really understand these things.
I don't even see the logic behind it. Like, where's the sense or the reason behind what he's saying?
I kind of get, like, if you were, I don't know, like, you just really high on some illicit drugs and someone pitched it to you. Like, I could get how you could theoretically, I don't know, like, he's, you know, one and one, like, where does it go? But but all you have to do is just have, like, think about it like a word problem, like you do with anything else. Like, you have one apple and you're multiplying it, like a multiplication is, like, you're multiplying it by the potential. Like, if you have the potential for one apple, Like, you're not getting any more apples.
It's just one.
Basic. It just, all yeah, you gotta okay, do is just okay. think about it in logical terms and it plays out.
It's yeah.
like, this guy's staked his
whole career. You can, but the reason that people like can say silly things like one times one is two is because of zero, I'm telling you. So how does zero times two make sense? How does that equal zero? Can somebody explain that to me? Like, that sounds just as ridiculous as one times one equals
it's
two.
It's like redundant to even say
I don't
well,
know.
What's nothing times two? Well, it's nothing.
No,
okay, well, why even talk about it?
You multiply.
Yeah, I mean, without knowing much about the subject at all, I think that there's something... You know, there's something weird going on there. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
Just curious.
Well, yeah. I mean, and you know how zero came about was money. I mean, the reason it came about was commerce. It wasn't meant for, like, mathematics or you know, like, the study of nature. It wasn't supposed to be that. It came about because of money, right? Debt. That's when zero came about. That's when negative numbers came
really?
About. And now we use negative numbers, right? And so now we use negative numbers to describe things like cold, right? So cold and heat are opposites. So like you're cold and it's negative heat? Like no, it's its own entity, right? In nature, there is no negative. There is no nothing.
Wait.
You know what I mean?
So you're saying that zero didn't come into play until they had to, until we started dealing with money?
Until we started developing a complex monetary system.
I'll be damned.
Yeah. Until we started dealing with debt. Until we started dealing with debt, right?
Sense.
Because anything, any nothing or less than nothing, it was not around before that. The Romans have numerals. They literally have letters. So they had no zeros, you know? Like, so I think
it's all
just
a big damn
ultimately
scheme.
Complicated things. Beyond the point.
Yeah, it's
well, yeah, but I mean,
yeah, very interesting.
It created the number 23s of the world. It really did. It created the equations upon equations upon it that you don't really need. Like, it's that rabbit hole. That's what it created, you know. In my mind, at least.
Well, you know that a math
I could be full of shit,
a math professor or a teacher would say, okay, well. Okay, Amanda, then how are we supposed to solve or even do linear equations without zero or negative numbers?
How are we supposed to solve this equation for -5? You're not, because there is no -5 in nature.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you have negative money. Like, and this is the thing. We all decided this was normal. As a collective consciousness, we're like, yeah, let's mess with ourselves this bad. Instead of paying you in actual money, I'm just going to pay you in debt, right? So I'm going to pay you in negative money. Like, no. No.
Maybe that's
maybe
it's crazy when you think
maybe zero fucked, excuse my French, but just maybe she's right.
Yeah,
maybe zero
I'm
fucked everything up.
I think there is, like, you know, there's got to be something to be said for numbers and math and, like, the mathematical principles in general, the science as we know it about the world around us. Like, that definitely sets the template for how we interact with a lot of, the facets of the world around us. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's weird, especially when you consider things like debt and whatnot. You know, I'm definitely not a mathematician. That was always my weakest subject in class. So I love to talk philosophy, and I love to talk about the philosophy of math. So you ask me about the real implications of it, and that's immediately out of my jurisdiction. Like, I can hardly wrap my head around, like, what it would be like without zero and all the implications, just because, like, I'm bad at math. But it's a very interesting concept, and it's something that I'm gonna have to go down that rabbit hole a little bit myself and look into.
I think you should. I think you should write a blog about it, Amanda. Just like zero screwed up the world.
I can. We don't have a lot of time, but I can write a number of things about it. Because you know that even in India, once they adopted zero, they started adopting the concept of their spiritual concepts actually shifted with that paradigm. Because, you know, reality mirrors itself. So they started meditating, like their whole meditation practice turned to this like emptiness. Have you ever heard somebody say the like meditate, like you're supposed to be this empty vessel, this empty thing. Before that time, everything was about unity. You know what I mean? So it caused like this emptiness to be a thing too in the spiritual side of it. So it just makes waves because we're in a mirror down here, man. I really believe that.
It could be the biggest conspiracy theory ever, right? Like some super rich person came around and was like, look, I don't know any other way to make money. And someone was like, I got an idea. If we create
negative money.
And we create negative money.
We can make more money.
Like we can tax these some bitches for stuff they don't even have. See, you know?
See, even saying it sounds ridiculous, right? Like you're like, is that real? Yeah,
I don't know.
But
yeah, and
like we
and
can't
I'll
get too lost
too,
down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. There's at least a lot of open room, like without knowing the subject very much at all. I'll say like there's an interesting shadow of a doubt, like a sizable shadow of a doubt with the way that we've talked about it just so far, like the idea of zero. But there's no, on the other side of the spectrum, just to keep it all in play here, there's no shadow of a doubt, even when you try and listen or read Terrence Howard's logic, there's no shadow of a doubt with 1 times 1 equals 2. That's definitely not true. And it's like, it's weird how much numbers can get in people's heads. And like, I don't claim to understand it, but it's really fascinating. It's like a crossroads of like mysticism and like hardcore like OCD neuroticism and like trying to find the truth and not being able to handle not understanding the truth. And like, I don't know, it sounds, numbers can be very intense, that's for sure. Well, and like the pursuit of truth can be intense.
If Carl Jung was to be in this conversation, right, let's say Carl Jung was sitting here, and I've not gotten into the black books that much, but I've read the red books and, you know, the stuff about archetypes and dreams. And like, did he ever speak of anything that would even correspond with as a negative existence? A negative existence or zero or anything behind it? I don't think so. Or even Joseph Campbell, like there's no archetypal energy that would, I can't think of, I'm probably not as well versed in it as either one of you guys are, but I can't think of anything that would correspond with it, you know?
That's a good question.
There is now, though, because we made it that way. Like I said, when you start thinking about emptiness, you find archetypes to describe that energy.
The void.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The empty box. You know what I mean? Like, it's that you find things. It's like it's a mirror, right? You introduce that into your reality, and then you automatically create. And numbers are really powerful at doing that if you study them, because essentially they are an archetype in their own self. Understanding numbers is understanding, especially if you apply it to the physical world, it's understanding the energies behind things that you cannot see sometimes, right? So that makes it an archetype in its own right. So, yeah, I think we're creators. We can create whatever. Make 1 times 1 equal 2. Well, but I don't know what that would do to psychology of people. I mean, if 1 times 1 equal 2, are we all going to become like, have disassociated personality disorders and be two people? I don't know.
I don't.
Maybe.
That's a good question.
You gotta send me a link to this. You gotta send me a link to this, dude.
I'm joking. I hope that doesn't happen.
What the hell this dude was talking about? Like, I want to read it. You know.
I know. Yeah, it's just crazy. Yeah, like Amanda, you were just talking about like the implications, like, you know, like what if 1 times 1 equals 2, or like what if people were even sold on that? And I was trying to go back in my head. I'll send you the stuff, Joe, for sure. But I was trying to go back in my head and think about what did he say about the implications? And that's just one of the many notches against him, because he didn't really have any implications. Like, not only was his logic not sound, but he was basically just saying, like, over and over, like, this is the greatest conspiracy that's, like, that anyone's ever stumbled across. How is it that I, in the history of history, has been the only one to ask this question? And you're like, and he's like, the implications are, you know, we can't even fathom them. Like, this is like, This is something that people have been trying to get to the root of for the last 10,000 years. And
what is he talking about? What?
That's pretty much all of
maybe
it,
he
all
already
of
has two personalities.
Dude, man, maybe he's like really crazy.
You know, straight up, there's a whole bunch to this, guys. He actually talks about, in the Rolling Stone interview, there's no follow-up at all. The reporter doesn't ask him any other questions, but he does directly state that he has 432 distinct personalities.
Jesus.
I don't
know what
it could have been a joke for all
maybe.
I know, but there's no follow-up.
No, see,
you know,
maybe one times one does equal two for him on an archetypal level.
It could.
I'm serious.
Like,
I don't know.
Yeah. And then he fractals out into multiple personalities, and he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This guy also has a whole philosophy on how if people use toilet paper, like, he actually thinks, like, they're lesser people. He says that everyone should use baby wipes, and he's, like, walked out on interviews with reporters.
I was about to be like, what does he use then? I thought he was going to say something ridiculous.
only baby wipes for Tanner.
I got scared for a second.
he's got this quote where he literally talks about, he's walking on the red carpet in, like, 2019, and a reporter's asking him, what have you been doing with your time lately, Terrence? And he says, he straight up says, I'm only paraphrasing this a tiny bit, where he says, I have literally, with my new mathematic equation, opened up the flower of life that philosophers have been trying to uncover for the last 10,000 years. Why would I continue to walk on water for tips when I have an entire generation to teach?
Oh, yeah, he's losing it. He's like, it's like megalomania.
Or maybe he's brilliant.
Yeah.
You never know, man. You can't discredit anything.
Maybe he's brilliant. It's funny how all the crazy people think they're brilliant, though.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. He's also equating himself to, like, Tesla and Einstein. He's like, I wish these guys, there's a literal quote by him where he says, I wish these guys were around to, like, celebrate with me, because they would have a field day and they'd be so excited about this discovery. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I think, like, Tesla would probably look him in the eye and be like, you're an idiot.
You know what? I'll give him credit. I like the thought experiment.
I don't know.
But I can't take it seriously. I think, yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. Terrence Howard also, before I forget, I wanted to say, just because this is a very interesting character, he watched his father stab a man to death in line at a mall to see Santa Claus in the 70s.
Definitely traumatize a person.
Yeah, so yeah. Terrence Howard is, you know, on one hand, like, you feel bad for the guy, but then you hear that he's beat every woman he's ever been with, practically, and he's talking about how he's basically the savior of mankind, and you're like, okay. We're just lucky that this guy hasn't tried to start a cult yet, is what it really boils down
to. Do you think he beat the women he was with because the women had sense and was like, no, one times one is one, and then he beat them?
Well, there is a quote, because I was so fascinated with this. I read some articles about Terrence Howard. And there is a quote where he says, my wife was talking to me real strong, and I lost my mind, and I hit her in front of the kids. So, yeah, I mean, if you're talking to Terrence Howard real strong at all, I guess, and that could include maybe telling him that his math is wrong. It sounds like he's a real narcissist. Say the least.
Anthony, oh my God.
but no, I mean, and not to dissuade, like, I like your idea, Amanda, of, like, considering the philosophy behind it. And, like, I think that toying with the potential fallacies of math is not a bad thing at all. Like, if he'd approached it a completely different way, I don't think I would agree with him still, but I would at least be more interested in, like, maybe going down that rabbit hole at least for some food for thought. But
he could have, like, worded it like, is one times one really one, or I don't know. And then just shut up, and people would have...
That would have been at least way more palatable than coming out and telling everyone that, hey, check it out, math is going to be completely different, you know, pretty much bow before teriology. Like, celebrities are just crazy, man.
Well...
Well, you know, there's a reason they didn't teach, like, you know, accounting in the olden days, the days of Plato. They taught geometry, yeah, I mean, and they taught music. Actually, music was a huge part of math. Well, they taught it in a way where they taught astronomy and music and geometry for, like, different reasons, you know, because music is numbers over time. And then geometry is the study of form, obviously. And astrology is, I forget how they framed it. But it's part of the quadrivium. Those things are, because those actually teach you the relationship of numbers in nature, not, you know. But money's a different story. Money's fake anyway, so why not use negative numbers and zeros? Right.
I think that's a hugely all made up anyway. Point. Yeah, it's like money is kind of an apex of the conversation here. It's like, what has money? Because I, you know, again, you start talking about numbers, and I'm like, I understand the implications less on like a statistical, physical level. But I could, you know, just like any other human being, I can full well attest to the fact that like money pollutes the mind.
Well, I'm not, definitely.
I'm not a communist. I'm not a socialist. But, like, capitalism, you know, has its own issues. And money in general is definitely, it can be a very sketchy thing. And I think that the you know, having not enough or too much, I mean, anything in between for that matter. So the concept of, like, the mass of money corrupting us is definitely something that just kind of, like, rings true to me.
Well, next time the bank says you're negative $36 in your bank account, you just tell them, that's not possible. I'm not stupid.
Right. How am I supposed to be? You know,
like,
I'm negative.
You can't take money away
physical?
From me that
no.
I don't have.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Sorry. That's your fault, not mine.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I just remembered it. Shoot. Astronomy. So it's the study of numbers over time, like music and space. So, just to clarify, like, that slipped my mind for some reason, but
it slipped your mind, or you looked it up?
Yeah. No, it slipped my mind.
Probably
I just remembered it.
Probably
sitting
both.
Here.
Yeah.
I didn't look it up. You guys, I can't. I have crappy internet. I can't Google anything when I'm
internet.
Talking to you.
Yeah. No, like I've done.
I can't open a browser when I'm talking to you on
I've
the computer.
I've done radio
my
shows.
Like 5 megabytes.
I've done radio shows at her house, and if you open up the browser, everything starts slowing down. Like, bleh, bleh.
Oh, no.
You can't do anything.
Live in the country.
Yeah. Well, I guess, I guess we got to get out of here because we've already went over. But I appreciate you calling in, Anthony. That was cool.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure to talk with you both.
Awesome.
Yeah, we'll do it again for sure. And we're planning on doing something in the future, like a Florida event here in Florida. So you got to come to that, man.
Oh, I for sure will. Well, who do you have on tomorrow, Joe? I could probably swing by again.
Well, tomorrow night, nobody. I usually do, like we do like a music request show. So that would be cool. We could play some of your music. Yeah.
Oh, work. All right, dope. Let's do it.
Yeah,
well,
do it.
We'll talk more about that tomorrow then.
All right, brother. Up.
All right. Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning in. Check out Black Hoodie Alchemy.
Dive Mine. Awesome. Dive Mine.net.
Thank you very much. Tippy Paxton came back for a third round, so if anybody wants to follow up on the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, you know where to find it.
You tell them
is that what you're calling them? I love it.
Yeah, you tell them to stay away from those lot lizards.
Yeah.
Last time I talked to him. He had a real problem with those things.
Yeah. Oh man, there's been so much development, Joe. Tippy is to talk about losing your mind down rabbit holes. I'll leave it at that. It's they're an interesting bunch there. But anyway, I'm out of here for now. Thank you for having me on.
There goes
bye, Anthony.
There goes Anthony. Hey, that was cool. That was a cool conversation, I think. Don't you think, Amanda? I enjoyed it. Very much so.
Yeah.
Finally got to, those conversations always go deep. But yeah, we're going to get out of here. And make sure you go visit the website, fringe.fm, lightingthevoid.com, joeroop.com, divemind.net. And yeah, we got more websites coming too. We're just going to take over. More websites coming. Keep it right here. We'll be back tomorrow night, same time, same channel. Good night, y'all. Sweet dreams. Night, night.
Night. Bye.